Would you join me, please, in a word of prayer? Lord, let the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all those present prove acceptable in your sight, my strength, my rock, my redeemer. Amen. Well, welcome. We are in week three of our series, Margins, where we're talking about not margins on paper, but margins in life, really. We're talking about margins in our time, in our relationships, in our resources, in our money, and we've defined that. Just to be clear, we've used this definition. Margin is the difference between our limits, our financial limits, our limits on time, whatever, our limits in our life, and then wherever we're operating. We operate right up against our limits, and sooner or later, it's going to result in trouble for us. And I don't really have to be a pastor to prove that to you. I think we all realize that that's true. I just came back this week from a wedding. We drove from Mammoth Mountain all the way up here. And the first leg of the trip, we had me, Lori, my mom, Gil here. We had my daughter, Delaney, and we had one of Kylie's friends all in the car together. And when we got to Reno, we got to drop off Kylie's friend at the airport and her luggage. And at that point, Delaney was able to stretch out her legs. And if you want to talk about the benefits of margin, she was very glad to have just a little bit of margin in her life. She was just living way too close to whatever the limits are of her personal space. Today, we're going to talk about margin in relationship. And I think you'll find that that works really the same way as margins in time and in resources. But in order to do that, I'm going to have to do a little background for you before I start into a story. So here on the slide, we've got military ranks. And you don't have to memorize this, but this is how, in general, this is how Air Force ranks go. The O stands for officer, so you see O1 there is a second lieutenant, O2 is a first lieutenant, O3 is a captain, and then you have major after that, lieutenant colonel, and then finally O6 is a colonel. And the way these promotions work in between these ranks, the first two promotions, from second lieutenant to first lieutenant, and then first lieutenant to captain, they're pretty much automatic. If you don't you go kill somebody, you're going to make rank, you know. Then the promotion between captain and major, I was an Air Force Academy grad, and I thought, you know, that's going to be pretty much automatic. Just do a good job wherever you are. That'll just happen. And then major to O5, lieutenant colonel, that's one of those things that you can do on your own. If you do, like I said, a good job, you can make lieutenant colonel on your own. And I thought, well, that would be nice. That would be my goal. O6, full bird colonel, is something that it becomes increasingly political. And you can't just do that on your own. You kind of have to have a sponsor, somebody who's got your back, somebody who's going to talk you up in the promotion board and that kind of thing. And I was the same guy then that I am now, so I didn't stand a chance in that. That was never on the table for me. I just don't have that kind of political background, that kind of desire. I didn't even bother putting any of the general stuff up there because that becomes completely political. But like I said, I had my own aspirations, and that's pretty much where they are. So with that as a background, you need to understand what life was like for me back right around the late 1990s. Lori and I were married. We had three kids who were 5 years old and younger. We were both captains. I was a year ahead of her. And I was working as a maintenance officer. She was a JAG. She was an Air Force attorney on her first assignment as an Air Force attorney. So a typical day looked a little bit like this. I'd get up early in the morning. I'd get ready. We'd get the kids ready and get them dropped off at daycare. And then I'd get into work about a quarter till seven, somewhere around there, where we would have this pre-production meeting. I was a Generation Flight Commander, and I'd meet with my NCOs, and we'd talk about the stuff that we were going to do that day so that I would be prepared at 7 o'clock for us to go into our production meeting with the rest of the maintenance folk. And there we would talk about all the plans that everybody had for all the stuff we were going to fix today. We'd get done with that, and we'd start sending those teams out. We'd dispatch them out into the field, and then you kind of wait around a little bit to see who forgot what. When they reach wherever it is they're going, they didn't bring the right tools, or it wasn't quite what they were expecting. So you kind of adjust to whatever just pops up immediately. And then there'd kind of be a lull. And during that lull, I would do promotion reports, I would do awards, I would do reprimands if I needed to do that. Sometimes I would go out and visit guys in the field. It's always good to, you know, go see your guys and let them know that you haven't forgotten about them. But lots of times I just had a lot of free time in the afternoon. I did long runs, long workouts, long lunches until the early afternoon. Early afternoon, stuff started to break again. Sometimes it just broke naturally. Sometimes we broke it when we were trying to fix something else. But sometimes we weren't able to fix what we thought we were going to fix. So we'd kind of get back together at the end of the day, all the maintenance officers and NCOs, and we'd start getting a plan together for fixing the things that, like I said, either we broke, that we weren't able to fix, or that just broke automatically. Now, if a lot of that hadn't happened, then maybe I'm going to be done 4:35 when the rest of the base is done. If not, you know, it can be 6 o'clock, it can be 7 o'clock, it can be late. But, you know, typically something was going to break. So 6 o'clock, pretty normal for me. And I remember being surprised, too, when I felt like I had a really long day. And Lori would be getting done just as late as I was. And this is a picture of living with no margin in our lives. And, you know, it's okay kind of for a season, but man, it is hard to live like that for a long period of time, especially with little kids. So that's our day-to-day life. And then something happened. What happened was this. Somebody that worked for me made a mistake, like a big, costly, embarrassing mistake, and our commander actually got fired over this. Now, don't feel sorry for him. He had a golden parachute. He didn't lose any rank. He actually got reassigned to Colorado Springs, which is where he wanted to go anyway. But as a result, I was coming up on my primary board for major, and I didn't make it. I was passed over, not selected for major. And that was an automatic in my mind. I thought I had that in the bag. So now I had a couple choices, and none of them really looked very good. My first choice would be not just longer hours to try and make it as an above the zone. I mean, this is going to take maybe not a miracle, but maybe close to a miracle. This is going to be really hard to make it not in your primary zone. This was going to take deployment. I was going to have to go somewhere else, somewhere that nobody really wanted to go for 6 months, maybe a year, away from my family, who was barely getting by at all right now. That's with me, working as much as I can with them and, you know, away from them. I'm just going to abandon my wife. That's not too desirable. But the other option isn't really a desirable either. That's just admit failure. Right? Just accept it. And give up. And this is the military, too, by the way. So, you know, people are going to remind you of this, and everybody's going to be thinking it, whether they say it to you or not. You're going to have to live as that guy who didn't make major. And you know that's exactly what everybody is going to be thinking. So I don't know if any of you have found yourselves in that situation. Probably not. But in situations maybe similar to that, I bet you a lot of you have found yourselves in situations that are kind of similar to that. Spend more time away from the family, even though that's not desirable, or give up on dreams, on status, on you name it, on your goals. And you may have even prayed a prayer that said something like this: Lord, please take care of things at home while I build a future. Secure a future for the family you have blessed me with. Now, doesn't that sound righteous and holy? Doesn't that sound like you're kind of reminding God, you've blessed him, or you've blessed me with this family, and you want me to take care of this family? Surely, God, you want me to secure a future with this family. Now, I'll do you one better. Here's a prayer that a lot of pastors pray. Oh, Lord, because that's how we like to talk. Oh, Lord, please taketh care of things at home whilst I do thy work and build thy church. Now, that is a holy prayer. And wow, there are, I mean, I'm kind of joking here, obviously, but there are a lot of pastors who have prayed something really similar to that. And you'd think, well, surely God would honor that, right? You're building the church. Anybody here ever hear of something called a PK? Pastor's Kid? Yeah, we have actually Pastor Art and Chris, his wife, are both pastor's kids. And I want to say right now, do not let them fool you. They are the most well-adjusted PKs ever. Because that is not normally how PKs turn out, especially if their fathers pray this prayer. PKs whose fathers pray this prayer feel neglected by their dads. They think their dads considered everybody else more important than they are. And they end up turned off on the church, turned off on dad. And they take a long time, if they ever are able to get over this kind of neglect. See, it's a little bit, this whole situation is a little bit like a backpack. See, we have a backpack like this of stuff that is our responsibility. And we carry it around, and sometimes it feels kind of heavy, but it's the stuff that was meant for us. And there may be a season in life where we need to do something that it would be so much easier if we could just hand off this backpack. So we may turn to somebody who's close to us and ask them if they will carry this load for us. I used to do this when we, Lori and I would go and hike 14ers. We'd be getting close to the summit on some of these, and sometimes weather would roll in, and she'd say, I'm turning back. And I'd say, okay, can you grab my pack? Can you take my pack? I'm going to make a dash for the summit. And so I'd hand her that, and I'd go as light as I could and try and reach the summit before the lightning came in. And I'd run back down, and I'd take it back. And in life, it's kind of like that sometimes. We have all these responsibilities that are ours. And so we may turn to somebody close to us and say, can you take this from me while I go do a deployment and try and make major? You know what happens? When we turn to somebody that we love and ask them if they would share that burden, they take it. Because they love you. And they want to be a good wife. And they want to be a good husband. They want to be a good son, a good daughter. And honestly, sometimes it's honoring when somebody that you care about needs you and they ask for your help. That kind of thing can strengthen a relationship. The problem is what happens when we leave it with them for too long. See, it's awkward because they have their own pack on and they have to kind of carry it like I am here. Just hold it out and in front of you and it gets heavy. I think Jill's climbing stuff is in here. It's getting heavy for me right now. If you're wondering, how can you tell? How can you tell if it's gone on too long? Well, if you are chronically absent from important events, when we keep on reminding them that this isn't going to be forever, we keep pointing to the future to make up for what's happening right now, and maybe even we throw it in their face and say, you know what, you promised. You promised you would do this for me. Even though we're starting to feel kind of guilty. But the way you can really tell is one day the pack drops. And there's no denying at that point that you have left it with them for too long. It's funny, when that happens, lots of times we look at that immediate event, what happened right there, but it wasn't just one thing. It was a series. It's a straw that broke the camel's back, you know? And sometimes when the pack drops, that damage can't be fixed. It's too late. You know, you've left them with a burden that they were never meant to carry. And we just left it with them for too long. Well, again, it's not always bad to hand off the pack. You know, there's seasons of life, if they're short enough. And it's honoring, like I said, it can form a bond where you show a little bit of vulnerability and you ask for help from people around you. And it's tempting, man, it's so tempting. You know why? Because we love results. We love progress. We love achievement. And at work, you can see that kind of thing. I heard about this thing called overtime. Some of you know about it, right? When you work longer than you're required to work, they pay you at a higher rate. It's fabulous. That's a result. You can see it in your very next paycheck. Sometimes you put in extra hours and you win the Henderson account, you know? Or you make major. Or you get an award. Or whatever. And when you're home, you don't usually get those kinds of results. Anybody ever go in Friday and somebody comes in and you say, "Hey, I didn't see you yesterday," and they say, "Yeah, I took the day off. I saw my son take his first steps, taught my daughter fractions, so she'll be getting a good school when it's time to go to college, and I took my wife on her dream vacation to Paris. Our marriage is just revitalized like you would not believe." I had a good week last week, but nobody's ever had a week like that, you know? And normally when you're home, progress is hard to tell. And it's tempting to just hand that off and do something that you feel like you can make real progress with. Now, I'm going to encourage you to look at things a little bit differently, though. Rather than think of our relationships in terms of our time, in terms of achievement, goals, and awards, I'd like you to think about it in terms of roles that we play. We all have different roles, hats, if you want to call it that, different roles that we play in our lives. And Paul, in his letter to the Ephesians, actually speaks to the importance of at least one of these roles. And so if you want to turn with me, you can find it in Ephesians chapter 5. And I'm going to start it just one verse earlier than a verse that's going to sound very familiar to you. Paul writes these words: "Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ." He's talking to married couples. Husbands and wives, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. It's interesting, he says out of reverence for Christ too, isn't it? Not out of reverence for one another, which I hope you have, but the reality is you may have to submit to your husband or to your wife, not out of reverence for them because you may not have a lot of it, but out of reverence for Christ. Would you do it out of reverence for Christ? And then he goes on and gets really specific with this. In verse 22, the very next verse, this is a familiar one to you, probably. "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord." And he expands on that, but then he comes back to the same idea and addresses husbands specifically. In verse 25, he says, "Husbands, love your wives." And before you say, "Oh yeah, I do love my wife, but I'm not going to submit to her," he specifies what he means. He says, "As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." And what is that if it's not submission? What was Jesus' attitude toward us, toward the church? The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. Not my will, but God's will be done, right? He put his needs after our needs. You put our needs first, and that is submission. And that's what Paul has called us to do. And let's not fool ourselves. That's what God has called us to do through the words of Paul. Now, I have never been asked to submit myself to my career, to my job, to my desire to make major, to my ambition, to my desire to get ahead, make more money, and not even to building the church. This is clear And yet, for me at the time, and still sometimes today, the obstacle for me was the same thing that we talked about in week one. It's this, it's fear. This is not imaginary, by the way. My fears were absolutely real in not making the rank of major. Lori, much later, would get passed over for lieutenant colonel. And her boss, who was a colonel, 06, saw on a subsequent promotion board that the names were coming out to see who was going to make it and who wasn't. And she turned to Lori, clearly not thinking that Lori's situation was what it was. And she said, "I just don't know how those people go on." Those people. You know, Lori, of course, was diplomatic, and I don't know if she said anything to her at all. And her boss just realized what she had said, kind of smoothed over it. You know, I probably would have said something like, "Yeah, I think I'll just go out to the parking lot and kill myself right now." But that incident just tells me that everybody is thinking it. And a lot of people, frankly, would say it to your face. And I don't want to sound too chauvinist here, but this was real for me. I had outranked my wife when we got married. And she would surpass me. And you want her to do that. You want her to succeed. But how many of my friends, and maybe not so much my friends, are going to point out that my wife now outranks me? And I'm going to have to listen to that from these guys for the rest of my career. What do I do? Well, I'll tell you what I decided. I said this: bleep those guys. Except I didn't say bleep. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. You look at a pastor that just makes your chest swell with pride. I wasn't a pastor at that time. Right, and I'm not encouraging anybody to say it. I know some of you are thinking, "Oh, Pastor Mike, we want to bring guests. I wanted to bring my parents." But we just never know what you're going to say. We never know what you're going to say. My mom's here today. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's change slides. Here's what I actually would like you guys to think. Why am I so concerned about the opinion of people that I don't really care about? And maybe more to the point, most of them don't really care about me. You know, when you start to ask yourself that question, who am I really trying to impress and why? Am I going to sacrifice the relationship of the people who are closest to me for people that don't really care about me at all? And what about if we took those, you know, allegedly holy prayers and we flipped them around? Could you say a prayer like this? "God, can you please take care of things at work while I take care of things at home?" Is God big enough to do that? Can you imagine? Can God actually do that for you? I don't want you to think this is a prayer that gets you a fancy car in the corner office. In fact, I think this prayer may do more in realigning what our ideas of success are, what our goals are, what we'd be content with. But when we think about the goal or the roles that we have, you know, I had a lot of commanders in my life. They came and went. Some were memorable, some were completely forgettable. But you know what? All of them were replaceable. My wife gets one husband while I'm alive. My kids get one father, ever. Anything else, somebody else can do. And here's a newsflash for you. Anything else, someone eventually will do. Don't trade what is unique for what is replaceable. And those roles are utterly replaceable. The unique roles that God has called you to do, nobody else can really do those for you. And what would it look like if we trusted God to provide just like He said He would, and we didn't worry about what we would wear, what we would eat, what we would drive, where we would live? We trusted him to take care of that while we leaned into the unique roles that he's called us to do. What a tragic question to look back and think, I wonder if God would have blessed me. I wonder what he might have done if I had said no to more travel, more workload, more whatever, and I devoted myself to the unique roles that he had given me. Larry had a different commander, not the one that I mentioned earlier, who made 06. He made full bird colonel, which is an achievement for sure. And at his promotion party, he started crying. He actually started crying in front of everybody, and it's because he realized what it had cost him. It had cost him at least one marriage. It had cost him a relationship with his kids, all for something that was going to be over in 3-4 years, temporary. And then, you know what? Somebody else would replace him. If he could go and do that over again, I am sure he'd start asking himself different questions and spending his time differently. Because you have to do that. You have to cut corners somewhere. In order to create margin, something's got to go. My prayer for you today is that you will be sure to cut the right things. Not unique roles, but replaceable ones. And God's given us a blueprint for it already. Even though it's scary, I get it. Fear is real. Consequences are real. But you know what the most repeated command is in the Bible? Fear not. What would life be like if we just trusted God to do what he promised to do, not just one day in heaven, but today, so that you could have life and have it abundantly. You could have it to the full. Would you pray with me, please?